Welcome to the Keegan Smith Podcast. Choose what you give your life to or have it stolen from you. My mission is to rewire for power. We've all been gifted massive potential. This podcast is about unwrapping that gift. What if you could? Potentiating wellness, abundance, and movement. Today's podcast is proudly brought to you by Real Movement Level 1. Real Movement was started 2014 to help coaches get better. Since that time, it's helped over 70 of its members open new training facilities and dozens of its members get started working in professional teams. Some of those coaches are now running programs in professional teams around the world. The program is designed not just around increasing your knowledge. You can go and sit on YouTube all day and hear information about just about anything out there. What this program is about you experiencing and taking on your best self. Get 3 days face-to-face and 3 months of online development. Get into it. Here we go. Podcast number 9. Really cool to see reviews coming in and getting some great feedback. I've had a few requests around some different topics. The topic that I am going to discuss today is one that's always very popular and one that has been requested. And that is to discuss fasting. Okay, so fasting, something that I've been interested in and implementing in my life pretty consistently and experimenting around for the last, say, 3 years. Before that time, like most people, I was scared of fasting. When I was glucose dependent, it was, you know, very intimidating to think about fasting. It wasn't really an option. Because I just felt so bad when I stopped eating. And, you know, if that's you, then you really, really need this podcast. This podcast, if applied, completely changed the future of humanity, can change the direction of humanity. Now, obviously, that sounds like an exaggeration. It's a podcast that has, you know, 500 downloads a day. How in the world could this possibly change the course of humanity? But it's 100% a piece of knowledge that, if applied, when applied, it changes the course of an individual. And if you change the course of an individual, then you change the course of humanity. Now, there are billions of people who would do well to listen to this podcast and apply what we're about to do, we're about to talk about. It's been absolutely life-changing, game-changing for me. I was never super lean. I was always skinny, but I wasn't lean. That goes with insulin resistance. If you have a diabetic who's untreated will be super skinny. A diabetic who's treated, then with high insulin and high glucose, they will become fat. It's really common for someone when they have type 2 diabetes and they go on insulin medication to maintain steady blood sugar levels, high blood sugar plus high insulin. It's very common for people to put on 10, 20 kilos of fat in their first 6 to 12 months of taking those diabetic medications. So the combination of high insulin and high blood glucose is one that by definition, it's type 2 diabetes, type 1 diabetes. You know, if you're getting those readings, then that's the diagnosis that you'll be given. It's pretty arbitrary, the numbers. It's nice round numbers that made sense for the... Well, those bugs are really loud, hey? I'll try and close that one, see if... I do live out in the country here in Australia, and the bugs are trying to join the podcast. Maybe I'll have them on at some stage. I am planning on having guests. I'm just not sure when I'm going to graduate to that stage of maturity. But for now, I'm sharing what I've got. So, fasting, getting that gives us an opportunity to get both insulin and blood sugar under control. When insulin comes down and blood sugar comes down, then we know that it becomes much easier to lose fat. Okay, so there's different approaches that you can use to lose weight. The Weight Watchers type approach is just control your calories. You can have 2 Mars bars, you know, a day, as long as your total calories, you know, fits on. I don't even know their system now. I know it used to work like that, but basically that macro controlled dieting, the concept of move more, eat less, it really doesn't work. It doesn't work because food has a drug-like effect. Food has effect on hormones, and hormones are what's driving, do you want to eat or not? When you eat right and you get your blood chemistry under control, then it's effortless to maintain body composition. Now, at the moment, humanity has a crisis of body composition, which is leading to all sorts of, you know, suffering and death, and you know, seeing people getting around with an extra 50, 80, 100 kilos of body fat. You know, that's not how we're meant to be living. You know, I put a 20 kilo vest on, a 30 kilo vest on, and go for a walk, and that's a challenging experience. You know, doing that in, you know, twice over, three times over, four times over in fat, it's just not the way it's meant to be. And I can look around in nature and tell you, hey, it's just not the way it's meant to be. So let's solve it. Let's get it out of the way and let's move on with what we're meant to actually be doing here on Earth. Obesity is a massive distraction, and the metabolic changes that cause obesity actually impact all the other major sort of diseases as well. So even if you're not fat on the inside, on the outside, you can be fat on the inside. So it's called toffee, thin on the outside, fat on the inside, T-O-F-I. So most people are either thin on the inside, thin on the outside, fat on the inside, or they're obese. That's the majority of humanity right now, definitely in Australia and definitely in developed countries. We need to fix that. Let's change that. Let's turn it around. Let's go back to being like every other species on the planet that we're not controlling the environment of, and let's like live in balance. The birds don't get fat. The lions don't get fat. Bears get fat and then they hibernate, and then they get fat and then they hibernate. So let's work out what humans are actually meant to be doing, and let's do that. I think that's a pretty good idea. I think it's pretty easy and doable. We don't need to be smashing ourselves with exercise to maintain optimal body composition. You know, in nature, yes, animals move around, but they're not exercising. You know, there is a certain amount of daily activity that's involved in what they do, but a lot of what they do is just lazing around. And if you get your nutrition right, you don't necessarily have to be moving a lot. You will still have a high degree of wellness. If you do move, if you walk, if you occasionally do hard stuff, obviously I really love training, and I love training really hard, but it's not something that we should need to do to maintain body composition. If you have to train hard to maintain your body composition, you're eating wrong and you're metabolically damaged. Okay. So out training your diet, while it can work for a time, and especially a lot of people doing triathlons and marathons and stuff, you see they're constantly battling. You know, they're finishing marathons and they've done multiple marathons and they're still fat. You know, and this is the story of Tim Noakes, but so many fun runners out there, you're trying to outrun food that you don't tolerate. If you stop running and you put on fat straight away, your diet, you're not tolerant of the diet that you're eating. Okay, it's a sign that you're out of balance. And like, let's just face that fact and look for a solution rather than continuing to try and outrun it. Okay, so fasting, it's basically runs parallel with two things, actually. It runs parallel in a way with veganism. I consider veganism a form of low intensity fasting. Like a juice fast is a low intensity form of fasting. You're getting limited nutrition. And mostly, you know, you're encouraging the body to break down proteins and do some recycling and make some changes. It's a low intensity fast when you juice fast. When you're actually like a raw vegan, I would consider that another form of low intensity fasting. A normal vegan who, you know, eats donuts and such, you know, living on processed foods and sugars and whatever that are non-animal based, you know, that I wouldn't, you know, I don't consider that to be fasting, but like a raw vegan or juice fast, basically place them on a continuum of fasting. The other thing that runs in parallel with fasting, which actually comes from the completely opposite side, is more of a ketogenic diet. Okay. So the reason why a ketogenic diet is like fasting is not because it's nutrient starving, like the juice fast or the veganism. It's because it's not pushing insulin and it's not pushing blood glucose. Okay. So in terms of your blood chemistry, a lot of things are actually similar while you're doing ketogenic diet to when you're doing a fast. Okay. So it has been considered. So the way we stumbled across this for the most part was in treatment of epilepsy. So kids with epilepsy, they did a lot better if they didn't eat, right? So they were starving kids with uncontrollable seizures, and they found that they stopped getting seizures when they fasted them. But you can't starve a kid indefinitely. So as soon as you make them eat again, or you let them eat again, then they get seizures again. So there's a problem there. So what they found is they could maintain high levels of ketones by just introducing fat and limited amount of protein, and that was able to continue the body in that fasted kind of state. Like the blood chemistry was similar enough that it stopped the brain from going into seizure. So you can see that chemically there's a lot of similarities there with the ketogenic diet. Fasting has been a part of human history and the history of all living things for a long time. Animals, if you've got a dog, if it's not well, it won't eat. If it gets hit by a car, there's probably going to be a week where it doesn't really want to eat. Maybe it doesn't even want to have water, right? Instinctually, fasting is something that we do. Kids do it. My kids definitely have times when they don't want to eat. Now, I would say that we've already built into them the habit of eating very frequently and not dealing with hunger unintentionally. I think, some of my family members have been through periods of starvation, or their ancestors went through periods of starvation, and, you know, there's a lot of love and emotional attachment with food. I think my kids, especially, my older daughter, Maya, I think she doesn't know how to deal with getting a little bit hungry. I don't think kids need to do a lot of fasting. In the ancient way, the number of days you would fast each day, I think it's like Athenian culture, the number of days you would fast a year is based on how old you are. So if you're 50 years old, you do 50 days of fasting. I do believe this is in the time of dry fasting. Okay, so dry fasting is the most extreme form of fasting, but we'll go through some different options here, because probably the majority of people listening to this, if you haven't got into this path, then it's extremely intimidating. And if you do refer this to someone who obviously needs it, who this can definitely change their life if they buy into it and if they experience it, the concept of fasting, extremely intimidating. So let's make it really, really simple. Let's make it so incredibly simple that it's impossible not to want to do. Let's firstly go through some of the benefits. So cleaning the body, autophagy, getting rid of damaged proteins, killing off weakened cells. Yeah, this is part of the process that happens with fasting. Training the will as well, like the mental side of it, knowing that you're in control, that you have power. My brother's on a 60-hour fast at the moment. Now, it's a ketone-supported fast, so it's using the Pruvit ketones. But it's basically like maybe 200 calories a day, so it's not a strict fast in the purest sense of the word. But going for 3 days on a couple of hundred calories a day, the supplements that they're using have meant that so many people around the world are actually able to execute something very close to a 3-day fast. So that's something, something pretty powerful. And I think that there's huge, huge health benefits to be had. And mostly this is underground, right? Like, fasting is not something that's being promoted by the government. It's not part of the food guidelines. Kids aren't learning about it in school. It's not front page news, even though it 100% definitely would be if the goal of newspapers was to increase population health or, advance humanity. That is definitely not the goal of newspapers. If you listen to a little bit of Noam Chomsky and read Understanding Power, or just think about it for a while, who actually pays for newspapers and why do they exist, then you'll realize why this is not being televised, why this is not front page news, but it 100% should be. Look, the crisis of metabolic derangement and obesity is front and center, and it's time that we move past that. Having the will and having control of yourself to say, yes, this is the period where I will eat, and this is a period where I won't eat, that is a huge win. So that's a second benefit to fasting. You can spike a regeneration of the immune system. They basically say that you build a whole new immune system after extended fasting. You get a big release of growth hormones. I know some athletes who've done it and actually had the testing done, and they've had very high levels of growth hormone produced. And growth hormone is something that anti-aging clinics will inject, to make people look younger and help them to recover faster. They've been used by athletes for the same reasons, and so it definitely works in terms of making people younger. And you get big dumping of them on the other side of a fast. So you have a period of restriction, and then you have the feast, which follows the fast, where the body rebuilds. So it's really important to put good nutrients in and to be really smart about what comes on the opposite end of the fast, or, you know, on the outward phase of the fast. It's really easy to overeat and to, you know, gorge on junk food, especially. And it's, you know, most people make that mistake initially when they start fasting, but, you know, it's not too hard to get past. One of the other benefits here, apart from cleaning the body, training the will, creating regeneration of the immune system, big release of growth hormone and other, you know, hormonal benefits. Next one is increase in fat burning. It's, you know, been a super easy and effective way for a lot of people to get their body weight under control. And this is, you know, probably the biggest reason why there's gyms on every second corner. And, you know, there's all these, you know, meal prep companies and all these things. There's a huge, huge desire in humanity to optimize body composition. What we see in the movies and what we see in the magazines are these beautiful bodies. And then on the other side, we're being advertised, and, you know, what's in the supermarket is mostly stuff that won't give us that body. So we've got this dichotomy. We've got this one thing telling us, hey, let's have a six pack. Let's look really fit and healthy and young. And we, you know, we live in a culture that reveres the young and kind of doesn't revere the old, which is backwards in itself. You know, our elderly people should be the knowledgeable ones and the respected ones. But I guess living in a time of technology is kind of taken a little bit away from our elderly as well. But that's probably another conversation. But we've got this dichotomy of this, you know, beautiful body and looking like Brad Pitt. And then on the other side, you know, indulge yourself and, you know, just don't think about it. And you only live once. And, you know, all the advertising that's on, you know, major sporting events is always for the foods that will do the opposite of make you a good athlete or make you healthy, you know. So we're in between those two things. So increased fat burning is a huge benefit of fasting, and ketone levels. Ketones themselves, anti-inflammatory molecule, cognitive benefits. There's lots and lots of research going into the benefits of the ketone molecule itself, independent of fasting. Okay, so there's a likely to, you know, be more and more stuff emerge that they support performance and cognition and anti-aging and, you know, anti-cancer. And, you know, there's lots of research going into all of those different areas to see what's actually going on and how it all works. Dom DiAgostino is a big one, getting that research done. Dr. Jacob Wilson, more on the sports side. But there's, yeah, huge interest from NASA, from the Army. How do we actually optimize human performance through these ketones? You know, what benefit can they have? Because obviously fasting for military people and such to get ketones or in space, you know, may not be the ideal path. So supplementing them could be. And supplementing ketones is actually one of the easiest ways to support fasting or to support going towards a ketogenic diet. If you do have blood sugar issues and metabolic derangement, you know, I've seen it over and over again where people have, you know, used the ketones and they just find that they overcome their cravings because their blood chemistry has changed. Their cells are getting nourished and so they don't have that drive to go and indulge in glucose. So they don't, you know, they don't crave the crap, so they don't eat the crap, and then, you know, that helps to shift body composition. So then what are our options here? How do we get started? Well, one of the easiest, lowest intensity ways to get moving towards fasting, there's two main like starting points that we can use. We can use like the 14-10 option. Okay, so you have 14 hours a day where you're not having food and 10 hours where you are having food. So that means if you start eating at 8 o'clock in the morning, then you finish eating at 6 o'clock at night. Okay, or you might not have your breakfast until, you know, 9 o'clock, and then you won't, you know, you can eat up until 7 o'clock at night. So having that restricted window, and this is one of the things that it comes from mostly the research is Dr. Sachin Panda, and it's something that Dr. Rhonda Patrick has really jumped behind as well. Super simple way to get started with this. And honestly, if you have to, you know, even a 12-12 is okay. The problem is when you wake up and you go straight and have your bowl of cereal at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning before you go to the gym, and then you have a snack at 10 o'clock at night, just before you get into bed. Most people aren't sleeping enough either. So, you know, you're actually only got like maybe a 7-hour window where you're not spiking insulin and where you're, you know, where your blood glucose isn't sort of high or, you know, yeah, being pulsed with food. Okay. So that's not going to work. That's not good enough. And there's tons of, you know, research and intelligent people. And if you get into this, you will see that pushing insulin and pushing blood glucose for, you know, 18 hours a day is gonna, you know, it's ending in tears. Like you only have to walk around the supermarket, you know, walk around in town and, you know, pretty much wherever you are in the world, you're going to see that that approach is not working. Okay. So, Charles Poliquin, who has been a big influence on me and, you know, sort of got me started in a lot of ways on quite a bit of this. I did his biosignature course way back in the day. He recommends don't eat for 2 hours before you go to bed. Okay. So same thing, you're extending that window a little bit. Now he actually does say get up and eat, bang in some protein, but you got to consider that he's concerned is primarily maintaining muscle mass and performance. Okay. So if we're focused on building muscle mass and cognition and those sorts of things, then yes, you probably do want to get a protein fat breakfast in first thing in the morning or pretty soon in the morning. If you want to burn fat for longer, I would recommend extending that out a little bit. It does depend on when you want to train, what your goals are. There are nuances to this on the performance side, but for the vast majority of people, just decreasing that eating window, not eating within 2 hours of bed, having 14 hours a day where you don't eat, will make a massive difference. And the studies are there supporting that. If you look up the work of Dr. Sachin Panda and Rhonda Patrick, there is support for that. So that's kind of where it starts, where the easiest place to get on with this and you start to engage a little bit of willpower and you start to have a little bit of personal power coming back. This podcast is about you having personal power. I went to a country where the president had been stolen during the night, abducted, taken out of his country, and basically the country was told the next day, no, this guy is no longer the president, even though he's democratically elected. He was doing things that you know, big business wasn't happy with, so they took him out of the country during the middle of the night and said, this guy is not the prime minister, the president anymore. So I went to that country because I was nearby and I was a little bit worried that some of the people who opposed that decision, you know, might end up in trouble, because the history tells us that when that those kind of things happen, then sometimes the people who support that government can be, you know, persecuted or executed. You know, it's fortunately there wasn't too much go on. There were a few people did die in the, you know, and it was, but it was all pretty grey. It wasn't like the Chilean kind of mass rounding up of supporters of Salvador Allende, who was, you know, a lot of his supporters were rounded up and executed inside of a football stadium at the start of the reign of Pinochet. So, you know, there's a lot of historical precedent for what I was talking about. So I was worried that things like that may go on at that time. So I went to that country. I was involved in, you know, the point is I was walking with some of the people who were standing against the movement of the, you know, the army to take the president out of the country. I wasn't necessarily an impartial observer, but that was kind of the, you know, the role that I was there, just to support that nothing too bad happened to those people. And, you know, there were a lot of, you know, troops and you know, riot police and all that sort of stuff in the street. Like, it was pretty hectic. But what I saw, and the point of this story, is that the majority or a lot of the people that I was walking with were overweight or obese. A lot of them were union workers, actually working for like Pepsi or Coca-Cola, and they were drivers and people working for those companies, and they were overweight or obese. And at that time, they were trying to put up present an alternative point of view to their government and to the, you know, to the military and, you know, the people who just removed the president. And they were trying to say, like, well, actually, this is not a good move and we don't agree with this. But we were doing protest, you know, it was protest marches, and it was like 5 kilometers that we had to walk. And you could tell it was like destroying people, you know. If, like, the tension was in the air, that there was, you know, a threat of violence sort of the whole time, and, you know, tear gas and whatever. It never actually came to anything too much while I was there. It was a little bit before I was there. But that the fact of the people just being physically, you know, disabled, and not disabled through, you know, genetic thing or through an accident, but they were disabled through lack of willpower and lack of knowledge. Okay. So that kind of disability, you know, I think we should reverse, especially if there's a will to reverse it. I don't think a lot of these people were overweight and, you know, cutting years off their life expectancy because they wanted to. I think they were doing it because they didn't know how to not do that. Yeah, the habits that they had would take him down that path. They didn't know how not to go down that path, but they were losing a lot of personal power and their ability to be safe in that environment and to make a statement to the, you know, to the powers that be. You know, that power was diminished by their own physical, you know, disability. And you know, it's not a good place for humanity to be. It's not a good place for society to be. I know that, you know, there's been a lot of times in the past where the army's had trouble with recruiting people because just, yeah, the population is in such a poor state of health. And I think we're probably seeing that again at the moment. So this is about regaining personal power through personal pride and knowledge and applied knowledge. Okay, so then we go, if we wanted to step it up a little bit, that's a good place to start. Do that for a week, do that for 2 weeks, you know, see what that feels like. 12 hours, 14 hours of restricted, you know, not eating. And that's no calories in that time. Okay, so no flavors, no nothing, only water is the concept there. Now, some of the other ones that we'll go to here, the next one is like a 16-8. Okay, so this was kind of popularized by a guy named Martin Birkin. He had the blog called Lean Gains, and it still exists. And he encouraged a lot of young guys to get super lean by just eating inside of an 8-hour window. And that, you know, that philosophy is still sort of pretty popular among young guys getting shredded. He did use BCAAs outside of his work time, outside of his, eating window. So he was having some protein outside of that, but that approach is very effective. Okay. So letting blood glucose fall in, so the BCAAs or having some protein outside of your eating window will push insulin, but it won't push blood glucose. So we're really worried about having high blood glucose and high insulin. That's really our major concern. If you're not really worried about building muscle mass, then don't worry about protein too much outside of your eating window. But that lean gains approach, that's next level. So that's stepping it up a little bit. The next one is extremely effective. The Warrior Diet 4-hour window. Ori Hofmeckler, he wrote the book. And, you know, all these guys have kind of claimed things that I think they've existed for a long time. Like if you look at old school strength training manuals and health stuff from 1800s and, you know, early 1900s, like they were fasting. Bernard McFadden, Upton Sinclair, Paul Bragg, you know, all these guys wrote extensively about fasting, and, you know, they had different approaches. Like none of this stuff is new. It goes back to the ancient Greeks. In the Bible, they fasted. You know, all religions have, you know, some period of fasting or deprivation. You know, if you look at Ramadan, you know, you're going to see that same kind of concept of time restricted feeding and actually dry fasting as well. So the Warrior Diet, Ori Hofmeckler, 4-hour window. Basically, you eat within a 4-hour window. So this one's a little bit harder. If you're getting to this point, then you're really starting to be behind the wheel of your own life. You're really starting to have control of your food. This might seem like, wow, how would you ever do that? That must be a massive suffering. But you'll find that as you, you know, if you move to a fat protein based diet, or if you, as you get the time restricted feeding 14-hour window under control, then you'll start to realize, and your metabolism will start to shift, and it actually becomes, you know, relatively easy. There's different ways you can go about supporting this. So depending on what the goal is. If the goal is mostly just health and wellness, and not necessarily like maximizing fat loss, then you might have a bulletproof coffee or, you know, bulletproof tea or something outside of your fat loss window. So that fat drink will make it easier to go longer without food. And if you want to work out your total energy intake and such, it can still definitely fit within a fat loss plan. But if you're looking to maximize fat loss, then you really want to go like nothing outside of that window. In Ori's plan, he included some whey protein, so similar to the BCAAs, that will push insulin, but it won't push blood glucose at the same time. Okay, so that is sort of the next level of approach that we could go for there. Next after that is the Eat Stop Eat Brad Pilon. That's 2 24-hour fasts a week. So you finish eating at 8 o'clock one night, and you don't eat until after 8 o'clock the next night. So it's a full 24-hour period, but you still eat both days. Okay, so if you actually fully skip food for a day, then you're going to go way over the 24 hours. You're going to be like 36 hours or something. So that approach is another level. But you know, being able to do that twice a week to go, yeah, I'm not going to eat here. I find that immediately, like, you just get rapid fat loss. Like, even within 24 hours, you can see a shift in your body. You know, for me, because I'm fat adapted and I've done ketogenic diet. It's the body is very efficient at just pulling body fat out whenever I do any of these sorts of approaches. So for me, if I go to one meal a day, which is, I guess, somewhere between Warrior Diet and Eat Stop Eat, because it's just one meal, so it's maybe like 1 hour a day or 2 hours a day where I eat, but consecutive days rather than the Eat Stop Eat is 2 days a week where you do the 24 hours. I get so lean. Like, it doesn't matter how many calories. There's only so many calories you can eat during that, especially if you're eating protein and fat. So the thing, what happens here, people, is that you will overeat after you're fasting. Like, your tendency is to overeat. At some stage, even if you don't do it straight away, you will eat an excess of calories to what you usually eat, but you will not catch up to what you missed. Okay, so say you fast for 2 days and you missed 6,000 calories because you normally have 3,000 calories a day. You miss 6,000 calories. On that third day, you might be so hungry that you eat 5,000 calories. But you've eaten 3,000 calories plus an extra 2,000. So there's still 4,000 calories that you haven't eaten. And there's beyond the calories in, calories out, you've pulled your baseline insulin down. You've had a period of low, you know, where blood glucose isn't being pushed. You're making hormonal, metabolic, genetic changes. Okay, so your genes are even responding to this. There's epigenetics, switching genes on and off, up and down. I've spoken about this on other podcasts. It's like a dimmer switch on your genes. This is going to have an impact on your genes. Okay, so when you stop eating, the body goes, okay, look, we need to learn how to mobilize fatty acids again. We need to be able to get fat stores out of the cells. We haven't had to do this for a while because we're just constantly relying on sugar, and whenever the sugar's not there, we just make you hungry and you go and eat. And you know, people are even waking up during the middle of the night to go and eat because they're so reliant on sugar, and they're not the system of emptying fat out of the cells, you know, to provide energy is basically broken. Okay, so these are kind of the step-by-step ways to get into fasting. Next level would be Dr. Jason Fung's stuff. Okay, he's written Obesity Code. He's written extensively about fasting. Dr. Jason Fung is a diabetes doctor. He wasn't happy with the care that he was providing by doing standard diabetic care. He felt like he was actually accelerating the death of the people he was working with, accelerating fat gain. So he started to encourage patients to fast, and he had extremely good results. So he encourages extended fasts. People are doing, you know, they start with 1 or 2 days, then they get to 5 days, then they get to 10 days. And there's, you know, people doing, you know, 30, you know, 50 day fast. I think the longest fast on record is like more than 300 days. And so it is possible to do extended fasting. If you want to go into extended fasting, you should really look into it a bit further and, you know, work into that gradually. Jason Fung in that approach actually encourages like tea and coffee, broth, things like that. So, you know, it's not strict fasting by the letter of the law, but extreme results in terms of fat loss and in terms of getting insulin under control. And you know, the criticism is made, all they're just going to rebound after that. And the thing is, you actually correct the metabolism so that the cravings for sugar and such are defeated during that time. Okay, so if you do go back to eating what you're eating before, eventually you will regain the weight, but you have an opportunity to, you know, you have willpower at the end of a long fast. And, you know, you have an experience of running off fat and protein. So, you know, your body's happy to run off fat and protein. All you need to do is put in fat and protein at the end of a fast. Once you've done some fasting, like, yeah, it is easy to rebound if, you know, we're talking about a few days and a couple of kilos, but it's not easy to rebound. You know, if you look at the numbers that are in his books, people are losing like 50 kilos. It's not easy to rebound and put 50 kilos back on. Plus, you also are comfortable with the method to drop it, right? So people will, you know, follow the method, start putting fat on again, and then they'll just engage with the method again because they're comfortable enough with the method. So, you know, they have a solution that has worked for them. It's a very controversial one, and you know, there is the psychology of eating disorders, and you know, that's at the other end of the spectrum to sort of these obese people that are addicted to food or metabolically deranged, you know, which I would put myself in that category, definitely through probably all my teens and 20s until recently, you know, where I feel like I'm actually getting control of this. Do you, you know, is there a risk of you're going to give people eating disorders with this? I don't think so. The research doesn't suggest so. But if you have that tendency, then, you know, you need to, that's your life. Like, take control of that and, you know, get the appropriate help. Do go down the path that makes sense for you. Like, this is not medical advice. What I'm sharing with you guys is things that have worked, perspectives from, you know, the world leaders in these things. I have done extended fast. I've done a 7-day water fast. No calories during that time, no ketones, no, you know, bulletproof coffees or anything like that. It was one of the hardest things, probably the hardest thing that I've ever done. I didn't feel amazing with it like some people do. I had low body fat, fairly low body fat to begin with, and I got to very low body fat. My energy levels were extremely low. I was suffering, and it wasn't an amazing experience, but it was good from the perspective of willpower and just, yeah, being able to suffer. Like, it is an important ability. Like, I'm never going to be that worried about missing a meal, or, you know, if I have to miss a day's food. Like, it's not the first time I've done that. For a lot of people, if they have to miss a day's food, like, they would think it's a death sentence, you know, where it's really not a big deal. So recalibrating all that stuff with a 7-day fast was really powerful. I've done a bunch of sort of like 3- and 4-day ones. When I get to my goal body composition wise, or get to ideal weight, then I'll probably start doing a bit more fasting again. At the moment, it's more something like that 16-8 type approach for me. Or the other way that I like to do it, which I haven't mentioned there, is just like 2 meals a day. So the old 3 squares thing, there's truth to that as well. Like, for most relatively healthy people, 3 square meals is probably going to be okay. 6 meals is not okay. Snacking in between meals, etc., like, that is really bad news. Like, 3 square meals may actually be okay for a lot of people. If you're already broken, then you probably need to go into some of this other stuff, like restrict the window a little bit more. But one way that I like to go at this thing is breakfast and dinner. So there's 2 spikes a day. And there's basically 10, 12 hours, 14 hours, depending on, you know, which angles and what time the food's at. But there's big periods of not eating in between, but you don't go massive, massive periods without, you know, getting in some protein. And, you're not causing as much of the benefits of fasting, but you're also kind of supporting performance a bit more. So, that approach works pretty well for me at the moment, doing like keto carnivore. I'm actually doing meat and berries, or animals plus berries is probably a more accurate approach. I'm eating berries. Well, I ate them last night and the night before, probably like 3-4 times a week having berries. I think berries sort of are meant to be eaten and happy enough to be eaten. Plants, you know, leaves and stuff definitely don't want to be eaten. And so they've built chemicals in to defend themselves. I don't think berries have done the same thing. Like, berries sort of do want to get eaten and moved around so the seeds go somewhere. They don't necessarily want to be eaten by me because the seeds are not going somewhere useful. But, I think that berries probably don't have as many of the potential disadvantages of some of the other stuff. I kind of like, you know, it's not an orthodoxy thing. Like, it's not like, it's so funny how when you get into a concept, it's like so all or nothing. I don't believe in everything in moderation. Like, I think that you should go to what you believe in most. And, you know, I'm not saying like half-ass it, but yeah, like, I don't necessarily think that going carnivore and saying like never anything from any plant source is necessarily that valuable. Even like the full keto, 100% have to be keto all the time, doesn't really make that much sense. Like, my ancestors have been having some carbs for a pretty long time. Like, I did a lot of damage with too many carbs and too much sugar and food that my ancestors would never have even recognized, let alone eaten. But you know, to say, well, I need to be in ketosis for the rest of my life. Like, why? What's the benefit of that? You know, there may be benefits. You know, you may have slightly longer life expectancy and such, but, you know, I don't think that we need to go to that extreme of, you know, oh, I never want to spike insulin. Well, why? You know, spiking insulin, it probably, you know, it has its place. Like, there's accelerating uptake of amino acids and glucose into the cells at times is probably a good thing. It's just how often. You know, if you do it all the time, then you get obesity. If you do it occasionally, tactically, then it's probably good. Like, do you really need to do it? Can you, you know, push insulin up enough with protein and just have amino acids there? Like, probably as well. Like, I'm getting muscle growth with, you know, less than 20 grams of carbs a day. I'm, you know, getting to the best shape I've been in. My training recovery is good. I don't feel a need to mess around with like cyclic ketogenic or adding a bunch of carbs at the moment, but maybe there will be a time where I feel like that's a smart option. So let's wrap up these dieting approaches, these fasting approaches. There's a huge amount of power in it. I recommend experimenting, doing your research, checking it out. There's a ton of stuff from a medical perspective. Dr. Yuri Nikolaev, Dr. Sergey Filonov, Valentina Lavrova. These are doctors who experimented and used, you know, consistently dry fasting. I'm not going to go into dry fasting here. We've gone on for quite a while today, but dry fasting is another level on this. Don't start with dry fasting. You know, start with the things that we've spoken about today. If you do want to get into dry fasting, then yeah, do some serious research. You know, always look after yourself and, you know, take responsibility for your journey. Continue to experiment, but do your best. This is going to make a huge impact to society. If we implement this, as we implement this, because more and more people are, you know, life gets better. Life on earth gets better. Life for everyone gets better. When things get better for you, they get better for me. You know, as your health improves, my health improves, and the health of the planet improves, the health of our kids improve. If they go to the same schools, if they've been in the same places, like, we all interact with each other in this. So, you know, we're all limiting each other. At the same time, we're all bringing each other up if that's what we're putting our energy into. So, yeah, fasting, I'm a huge, huge fan of it. It should have its place. Be smart with it, experiment gradually, and let's see where we can take it. Man, that guy can talk. But he does it because he loves it. If you loved it, share it. Give us some feedback. What was great? What didn't you like? What was your biggest take-home message? Make sure you stay in touch with us on Instagram and share your wins, people. This win is only going to come if we do it together. We have to take ourselves further. By taking ourselves further, we give permission for everybody around us to make positive changes in their lives and to become the people who they want to become. Everybody's changing the world. You are changing the world. Let's do this together. Let's see how far we can take it. Imagine if we all put our full heart into becoming the best versions of ourselves every single day.